Chapter 27. And with him was Hermann Göring.
"You and I must be twin souls," Göring said. "We seem to be yoked together by whoever is responsible for all this."
"The ox and the ass plow together," Burton said, leaving it to the German to decide which he was. Then the two were busy introducing themselves, or attempting to do so, to the people among whom they had arrived. These, as he later found out, were Sumerians of the old or classical period, that is, they had lived in Mesopotamia between 2500 and 2300 B.C. The men shaved their heads, no easy custom, with flint razors, and the women were bare to the waist. They had a tendency to short, squat bodies, pop eyes, and, to Burton, ugly faces. But if the index of beauty was not high among them, the pre-Columbian Samoans, who made up 30% of the population, were more than attractive. And, of course, there was the ubiquitous 10% of people from anywhere, every place, 20th centurions being the most numerous. This was understandable, since the total number of these constituted a fourth of humanity. Burton had no scientific statistical data, of course, but his travels had convinced him that the 20th centurions had been deliberately scattered along the river in a proportion to the other peoples even greater than was to be expected. This was another facet of the river world setup which he didn't understand. What did the ethicals intend to gain by this dissemination? There were too many questions. He needed time to think, and he couldn't get it if he spent himself with one trip after another on the Suicide Express. This area, unlike most of the others he would visit, offered some peace and quiet for analysis, so he would stay here for a while. And then there was Hermann Göring. Burton wanted to observe his strange form of Pilgrim's Progress. One of the many things that he hadn't been able to ask the mysterious stranger, Burton tended to think in capitals, was about the dream gum. Where did it fit into the picture? Another part of the great experiment? Unfortunately, Göring didn't last long. The first night, he began screaming. He burst out of his hut and ran toward the river, stopping now and then to strike out at the air or to grapple with invisible beings and to roll back and forth on the grass. Burton followed him as far as the river. Here Göring prepared to launch himself out into the water, probably to drown himself. But he froze for a moment, began shuddering, and then toppled over, stiff as a statue. His eyes were open, but they saw nothing outside him. All vision was turned inward. What horrors he was witnessing couldn't be determined, since he was unable to speak. His lips writhed soundlessly and didn't stop during the 10 days that he lived. Burton's efforts to feed him were useless. His jaws were locked. He shrank before Burton's eyes, the flesh evaporating, the skin falling in, and the bones beneath resolving into the skeleton. One morning he went into convulsions, then sat up and screamed. A moment later, he was dead. Curious, Burton did an autopsy on him with the flint knives and obsidian saws available. Göring's distended bladder had burst and poured urine into his body. Burton proceeded to pull Göring's teeth out before burying him. Teeth were trade items, since they could be strung on a fish gut or a tendon to make much-desired necklaces. Göring's scalp also came off. The Sumerians had picked up the custom of taking scalps from their enemies, the 17th-century Shawnee across the river. They had added the civilized embellishment of sewing scalps together to make capes, skirts, and even curtains. A scalp wasn't worth as much as teeth in the trademark, but it was worth something. It was while digging a grave by a large boulder at the foot of the mountains that Burton had an illuminating flash of memory. He had stopped working to take a drink of water when he happened to look at Göring. The completely stripped head and the features, peaceful as if sleeping, opened a trapdoor in his mind. When he had awakened in that colossal chamber and found himself floating in a row of bodies, he had seen this face. It had belonged to a body in the row next to his. Göring, like all the other sleepers, had had his head shaved. Burton had only noted him in passing during the short time before the warders had detected him. Later, after the mass resurrection, when he had met Göring, he hadn't seen the similarity between the sleeper and this man who had a full head of blondish hair. But he knew now that this man had occupied a space close to his.